Welcome to Silence Voices, Stories of MST, the podcast dedicated to survivors of military sexual trauma. Join host Rachel Smith and guests as we provide resources, community, and support for those navigating the aftermath of MST. Together, we aim to raise awareness and foster understanding. If you're struggling, you're not alone. Welcome to a new episode of Silence Voices, Stories of MST. As always, I'm your host, Rachel Smith. Today, we welcome our special guest, Bianca Vasquez. She is incredible. She was a part of the Marine Corps, and she bravely shares her journey with us. She was challenged with a pretty severe injury, as well as MST. And we talk about culture, not only from the military, but family life. She did have an uphill battle there as well, which is something that I think a lot of people that are joining the military can relate with, because they might be the first ones in their family. We also discuss what it's like to be a woman with a severe injury and not being taken seriously by medical professionals. Unfortunately, a lot of us can relate to that. I know I can. Bianca opens up about her experience with MST, and it's nothing short of heartbreaking. She encountered a true predator. It's something that she struggled with for a long time, and you can still hear the pain in her voice throughout this interview. It is a pretty hard story to listen to, but what she turned that pain into was something very... it warmed my heart to hear it, where she wasn't only thinking of herself and her healing journey. She thought of how PTSD actually can affect children, which is not something people really think about when it comes to veterans. They think about the veteran themselves, not their entire family and their surrounding community. Bianca is actually working on advocacy through children's books. They are the My Moto Mommy series, and she really shows this unwavering commitment to helping people in the struggle, especially kids. And if you want to send her a message, stick around to the end of the episode and I will tell you how. Here's Bianca.
Hi, yeah, my name is Bianca Vasquez. I was in the Marine Corps. Unfortunately, faced by unforeseen circumstances, so I didn't get to serve the whole time, but I did serve, and I'm proud. I would do it all over again if I could. And and now I'm here literally trying to advocate for mental health and MST and MDV. So
wonderful. Thank you for your service. So we're just going to dive right in. What made you decide on the Marine Corps? That's such a hardcore, yeah. Everybody's like, oh man, I'm not sure about that basic training.
I mean, it was not basic, let me tell you. It was hard, right. Yeah. So honestly, in high school, I joined ROTC. I didn't choose it. I was kind of forced. Just a lot of kind of stuff happened, you know, in my freshman year. I joined the swim team, and then my mom was like, no, and then, you know, little things like that. And so my counselor was like, well, you have to do some physical something, and PE fell in that. And so I was like, all right, I guess I'll try. But I never really had an idea or thought about the military, nothing. And so I loved it. I joined and I loved it. And our instructor was a Marine. So Gunny, I owe it to you. Yeah. So he just really inspired me. He was, I didn't have a dad. My dad passed away when I was 7. So he really, really, I mean, with all of us, jumped in as a dad role. I mean, I think he is the best teacher I've ever had in my entire life. And he was just so dedicated and so supportive. And I think that on top of being like the program, it just inspired me to be a Marine.
Wow, that's so amazing to have someone step into that role in your life. And I'm so sorry to hear about the loss of your father. Did you have any other family members that had joined the military at all? Or this was just completely new to you?
Actually, my cousin was a Marine. But it's funny because, I don't think we really like celebrated it or talked about. I mean, honestly, the Hispanic community doesn't really like hoorah military, you know. I know my mom, for example, she was super against it. Even when I joined ROTC, she was like, they're going to make you go. And I was like, they're not going to make me do anything. Let me just, you told me not to do this. You told me not to do that. Now I'm doing this every, you know. And so she, even when I joined, she was super against it, you know. So it's not, I feel like it's a common topic in within our culture, you know. For some reason, we don't really celebrate it. So it's like, I don't remember it as a child that he was a Marine. But afterwards, when I saw the pictures in my aunt's house and stuff, and I was like, oh, that's funny how we never talked about it, you know?
Interesting. So how long was it between going to the recruiter and getting to basic training? Was it a long waiting period, or it was just boom, you were there?
It took a little bit because, so when I graduated at 17, and my mom was like, I'm not signing that contract. She was like, I don't care what you do, do something, but you're not leaving. So I was like, all right. So I dabbled in community college, didn't like that. I went to cosmetology school. I did not like that. And so I was in school when I was just like, you know what? I'm old enough to like sign my own contract. So I went to the recruiters behind everybody's back. I signed and they were and they literally were waiting for me to just finish the school because it was like a year long thing. I don't know. I vaguely remember, but there was like a time frame, right, for me to finish. So I was supposed to leave, I think, like 2 weeks after I finished cosmetology school. And so I had to wait until I finished that. So I want to say maybe 4 months or so from the time I signed to when I had to leave. Yeah. Yeah.
And what was it like getting off that bus? Were you just terrified?
It was surreal. Like, yeah, I'll watch videos sometimes and I'm just like flashbacks. And yeah, definitely no one can prepare you for that experience, you know? Like they literally drove us in a bus in the dark, South Carolina. All you see is kind of bushes everywhere, kind of, you know, you get there and you're like, oh, you already have butterflies in your stomach. You're like, oh my God, this is it. And then they get on there and they're like, get off. Whoa, you know, and they're just like screaming in your face. And you're just like, oh, okay. It's just chaos, literally chaos. I don't think you sleep for the first night.
Oh, absolutely not. I couldn't imagine that. You're probably just sitting there like, what have I done?
Literally everybody was contemplating their life choices that night. I'm certain of that.
How was that experience though? Was it like after a few weeks you just bonded with everyone else and were able to make it through, or was it kind of panic, chaos? Oh God, why?
I think for the first couple weeks, it was like panic and chaos. And then we had recruits that had to get dropped because they were like refusing. They're like, I'm not doing this. And they were like, yeah, you're doing it because you signed, you know? And I mean, it was literally chaos because there was so much diversity, not just in people, but just like personality and behavior, you know? And so you saw what those people got and you were like, I don't know. I know I signed up for this, but I don't want all that extra attention. No, you tell me where to stand, how many times to run, how high to jump. You tell me because I'm not going to be them, you know? But I want to say the first couple weeks were kind of chaotic. But then after that, once we really got into routine of things, like that's when the bonding started, you know? So definitely I miss that bonding.
That is an interesting point you make, that you saw early on that you didn't want to be the person that stood out and had a bunch of attention because you saw the negative consequences of that. And that's something we'll touch on later, because I think that is a very good point about how they instill that military culture into you. That is one of the first things, is you don't want to be an individual.
Absolutely not. Yeah. And that starts from the beginning.
Oh, yep. Yep. As soon as you get off the bus, it's if you stand out in any way, shape, or form, your life is hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you were finished with training, what was the process like after that?
So it was a little difficult for me. I finished, I was injured. And so I got to go home and I kind of pushed through my injury, to be honest. I did get seen for it, but I was just like, I just want to finish. Don't drop me to the next cycle. I'm not trying to stay here any longer. Like, I will suck it up, you know? And so when I went home, I got seen by my regular doctor for a 10-day leave. And he was like, you know, you have like a very badly sprained ankle. I had like a stress fracture. And so he's like, you need to have like some days off, you know? And I was like, okay. And then that was only 10 days. So then I went to MCT and, which is all, you know, literally war training, right? That's just field training. And I got there and I was like, hey, how this doctor's note? And they said, and he was like, nope, you wanted to be a Marine, right? You don't get days off. So go grab your stuff, get in line, do whatever. And I was like, all right. So I went off to MCT and that's when my body was like, no more, because we were in the field 24/7. So that training was actually fun and cool. I enjoyed it a lot, but I fractured all my toes. and made my stress fracture worse. My sprained ankle obviously got worse. And so then I had to go to the rehabilitation platoon so I could get better, because there was no way, you know. I remember one day we were hiking and my corporal was like, come here. And I was like, okay, because I couldn't keep up anymore. Like, I was all the way in the back. And he was like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, nothing. And he was like, no, I see how you're walking. I couldn't take off my boot because it was so swollen. And he made me. And when I took it off, he was like, my toes were purple. My ankle was blue. It was like, you know, and he was like, how have you been? How, you know? Oh, wow. I know. And I was like, yeah. I don't know. I was told I had to suck it up. So I did, you know? And so, yeah. So then I finally was able to get the medical attention I needed for that. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that wild? As somebody that has like no, well, I'm sure they have, you know, self-aid buddy care,
yeah.
But they don't have an extensive medical background, yeah. Where they're like, oh, a doctor's order? Nah.
Yeah. No, literally. It was funny too, because I was like, how am I going to walk in here and be like, I don't have this doctor's note, you know? But I did, because I mean, I was hurting, you know, and it was not good. And so they were like, no.
Oh, man. Mm-mm.
You know? And I was like, oh, okay. I guess not. Whatever. So that led to that, and you know,
rehabilitating. Yeah. What was the healing process like for that?
It was a joke. There was no healing process.
Oh, no.
There literally was not. So I get dropped right to healing platoon. Literally, it's rehab platoon, right? And so I go and I get seen, and it's just like, it was just like my luck, right? Had the worst doctor. He was the worst. That man till this day. And so I went in, I was like, hey, you know, like, toes are purple, you know, whatever. And he's like, oh, they're all fractured. Oh, okay, this, that, whatever. And so I was like, oh, okay. They put me in a cam walker. They give me crutches. And mind you, we're in North Carolina now. So we're on Camp Geiger. And I don't know what it looks like now, but it was like all like dust and pebble road, you know? And it was like, yeah. And the female barracks were like all the way on the other side of the base. And of course, formation was at the male platoons at the male barracks, which were in the front of the base. So I had to like, with my cam walker and my crutches, yeah. And then his first order for rehabilitation was physical therapy. And let me tell you, I remember the first day I got there, he ordered for me to put my foot in ice water and pick out things with my toes. How if my toes are fractured? Okay. He ordered for me to do exercises on the stairs. And I remember the corpsmen that were working the rehab were like, but your toes are fractured. I was like, yeah. And they're like, are you sure you saw him? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, but, and I was like, I know. I know. I mean, the corpsmen were questioning the doc, but guess what? Who's in charge? Doctor, right? So honestly, I just ended up getting worse. Like I didn't get better. And then my hip, I got hip tendonitis after from the crutching and the boot, you know, because it was uneven gravel like every day. And every day we had to try. And then the chow hall was on one side. The male's barracks were on, and always formation was at the male's barracks. And then we had to go all the way to the female barracks. So honestly, I just got worse and worse and worse.
Oh, man. I, you know, don't have much of a medical background, but holy cow.
Yeah.
That sucks. Ugh. Do you ever hear the old joke where it was like, what do you call a doctor that graduates at the bottom of their class from medical school?
No, what is it?
It's like sir or ma'am. Sir or ma'am, yeah. Because they joined the military.
I was going to say, is it because he joined the military? That's so funny.
Yep.
It's true. I mean, he was
terrible.
Girl, he was the worst. He was the worst. And like,
oh, as, I'm so sorry.
As I got worse and I would see him, because it was weekly checkups, right? Which I don't understand what's supposed to get better in a week, right? Even if you are doing the proper treatment, like what's going to get better in a week, right? Especially when you have like fractured bones and you know what I'm saying? And so every time I would see him and I'd be like, dude, like now my hip, I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. You're just trying to get out of here. And I was like, no, sir, you don't know how much I fought to get here. Like, I want to be here, you know? And I would tell him, like, fix me every week. He'd be like, no, he'd send me back. I'd come back the next week. And it was the same battle with him every week. I know what you're trying to do. I know it. Next thing you know, you're going to tell me it's your back. Well, sir, if you keep breaking me, maybe next time it is my back, you know? And it was just terrible. That experience was so bad. He undermined everything. Everything I said every single week. He never really did anything. I was on naproxen for pain. Okay? Naproxen. My staff sergeant.
They gave you less than Motrin?
Less than Motrin. For broken bones.
Wow.
For purple feet. You know what I mean?
I've never heard that before.
My wow. Staff sergeant, I tell this story all the time. My staff sergeant one day was like, we were in the squad bay, right? And I was like in pain and we're just like sitting there. And we were in the male squad bay. And so the guys that were like really hurt, they were sleeping in their, you know, beds or whatever. And so I was sitting there and Staff Sergeant Jackson comes out and he's like, Vasquez. And I was like, yeah. He's like, why the hell do you look like that? And I was like, well, he's like, you look like shit. And I was like, I feel like it. And he's like, you're pale. He's like, half these people are high that don't even need it. He was like, why do you look like that? And I was like, cause I'm hurting, Staff Sergeant. Cause I'm, you know, and he was like, what are you on? He literally almost threw down with my doctor. He did. Like, wow. He's like my second gunny. Gunny from ROTC, thus he has my heart. But Staff Sergeant, really, he saw it. And I was pale from the pain. You know, I was just like in a daze. Like I was in, you know, like my body couldn't handle it. And not only that, like I was progressing my pain and my injuries daily at PT, you know. And so, yeah, he went over there and he tried. But that guy, I'm telling you, that doctor, I don't even remember his name. It's probably locked up in my like trauma memories. But he was the worst. You know what I mean? He, naproxen, that's what I got. And it's true. Like, I don't want to minimize other people's pain because it's all relative, right? I have like no pain tolerance, so I'm not one to speak. But I know that there was other Marines there with less severe injuries on higher a higher pain meds, you know. But he just didn't like me for whatever reason. And yeah.
Wow. And it makes you wonder, like, if he says, I know what you're trying to do. So obviously other patients have had similar issues. Right. And you would think someone would connect the dots of, if all my patients continue to get worse, yeah. maybe I'm the problem.
Yes. Like, he is the common denominator. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. But he was not the best.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Yeah.
How did that get resolved?
So it didn't. I ended up getting out because he refused. Yeah. He was like, well, not among other reasons, but that was the, you know, main factor. He was like, you know what? I'm going to admin step you out. He's like, I know you're trying to get a med step, you know? And I was like, I'm not trying to get anything. I just want to go back. Like I told you week after week, right? And he was like, no. He's like, don't think you're going to get anything out of me. I'm going to med. And at that point, so many things had happened that I was just like, you know what? Do it. Give me the damn paper. Just, I'm done. I cannot, you know, I can't handle this anymore. It was just constant torture of just physical pain and just not being heard, you know, like not being taken serious. And I think that took the biggest toll on me. You know, I was like, I'm here. We're supposed to take care of each other. We take care of our own, right? And I'm constantly telling you, like, I want to go back. I literally had for MCT left, not even a week. I think I had like 5 days. And MCT, if I'm not mistaken, is 21 days, if I'm not mistaken. So I went through field training for over 2 weeks on fractured toes without complaining. I didn't ask to go see medical, you know, like somebody saw me and was like, yeah, something's wrong with you. You got to go, you know. If it wouldn't have been for that, I would have sucked it up till the end, you know? And so I just thought that it was very unfair that, you know, everything I had put forth from the beginning to that point and everything I was saying was completely ignored.
Yeah. And it's horrible to hear so many female service members going through that, where they're just, and I think that's actually a problem in wider society of women's pain not being taken seriously by doctors, where sometimes they'll say, oh, you're having menstrual cramps, when actually it's appendicitis or a heart attack.
Yeah.
That's actually quite common that women die because their pain is not taken seriously. So I'm so sorry to hear that. Yeah. And then you have also the aspect of MST where people are not only are they not heard, but they feel like they're silenced, like they can't speak up about that. So in this short time, you have this physical ailment that's getting worse, and then MST popped up.
Yes. So
would you like to take us through that?
Yeah. So the irony within the background of that incident is, speaking of physical ailments, so we had this friend. She was a Marine and she was in the rehab platoon too. And just to show how we're not taken serious, right? She was like severely injured. Like she was this tiny little thing, right? Like I'm petite. I'm like 5'1" on a good day, you know, like I'm not tall, you know, whatever. But she was like this tiny little, like 4, I don't even know how she got through boot camp, jumped over stuff. Like she was tiny. But she was really injured. She had like really injured her hips. She had to get screws in her hips. And she had to walk with a cane, and to walk, she had to like really, like literally rotate like her whole hip forward to take a step. So she was really damaged. Like she really, really hurt herself, like visibly, you know? So anyway, she'd been there for a while. And she was waiting for her medical separation, the stuff to go through, because there was no way she could continue, right? And so I just found it astonishing that it took that long for them to push through that process for her when she literally is physically, just like visibly physically disabled. And she was like 21. And it was just, it was sad, you know? And she never went out. She never did anything. She just hung out in the barracks. So she finally got her separation and her rating, and she was ecstatic. So she decided she wanted to finally go out for once, because this was it for her. She was done. She was going to get to go home. And so it was a group of us, right, that we always hung out every weekend. You know, it was... So it was me, my now best friend, and two other Marines, two male Marines, right? So it was always just us four every weekend. And so we were like, hey, come along with us, you know? And she said, okay, you know, whatever. And we usually either we went line dancing or got a room and, you know, had some drinks in the room and just, you know, mess around, you know how we are. We make a good time out of nothing, right? When we're together.
Right.
go to Walmart at midnight and just whatever, you know?
Oh,
yes.
Those are the days.
Those are the fun days, right? Like, who has fun at Walmart? But we did, you know? So, yeah. So that was our routine. It was either one of those three things, you know? So anyway, we invited her with us. We got a room. And we just hung out. We got a couple beers. And the other thing that stands out to me from this night is that, not that I'm proud of it, but I would drink. Like, when the weekend came, I drank, you know? This weekend, they decided to get beers, and I was like, I'm not really a big beer drinker. So I was like, all right, whatever, who cares? We're just hanging out. It wasn't about drinking. It was just about hanging out. And so we did that, and next thing I know, they're like, we had gotten a new guy, or the guys had gotten a new Marine dropped into the rehab. So they invited him. So no big deal, right? Okay, cool. So we're in the room, we're hanging out, we're dancing. You know, I want to say I had a beer and a half, maybe. And we're all having a good time. By the end of the night, the guys are really there, pretty done, you know? And so whatever, we're still having a good time. We end up going to bed. And so, like I said, that was our routine, typically us four, you know, so we didn't mind sharing beds, whatever. We were like brothers and sisters, literally, you know, there was nothing ever more or less than that for the whole time that we had been there hanging out. But this night it was more of us. So, you know, the new guy slept on the floor, and between us, we shared beds, the other four of us, no, five, because she was there. We shared beds, and then somebody slept on a couch. So we were all like scrunched up, you know, whatever. But the guys, they were passed out. So we were sleeping. And I remember that night, I could hear like rustling, right? And I was like, help. And I felt really, I don't want to say drunk, but like I had drank too much. And I just didn't understand, because I was like, I didn't really drink, you know? And so it was just weird. And I was like trying to figure out where the rustling was coming from. And this is one of the things that the guilt kills me. I could see the new guy making his way on the floor towards where my friend that was getting out was. And I saw him like trying to make his way over there. But like I said, I was like kind of sleepy. I couldn't really wake up. And I really wasn't sure what he was doing. And I was just like, what is happening, you know? And so I just kind of turned around and like went back to sleep. And not sure after that, I feel somebody's hand reaching through my pants and my underwear. And I look over and it's him, and I'm trying to push him off, you know, and in that panic, like I couldn't scream. I didn't think about screaming. And in that moment, it like clicked. I was like, that's what he was doing over there? You know, like, that's what he was doing. And so then I panicked even more. You know, I'm trying to push him off, and he's strong, you know, and he's just like on top of me. Forcing himself, you know? And you can't, I mean, you can't. No matter how much training you have, no matter how strong you think you are as a woman, you know, like, you cannot overpower that. And everyone stayed passed out. And I think it's just they drank too much, you know? No one heard anything. And I remember rolling back over in bed and just closing my eyes and thinking, like, if I just pretend to be sleeping, like, none of this happened, you know, like, was it real? You know, nobody saw it. It just wasn't real, you know? So the next morning, I wake up early. I start getting ready. We're going to go to the Waffle House, which is routine for us, right? And so I get up like any day, you know, and I get ready and I'm in the mirror and my best friend walks in behind me. She was like, hey, did you hear what happened to our friend that was getting out, right? And I was like, no. She's like, yeah, she told the guys that the new guy was trying to, you know, assault her. And I swear to you, like, my face just dropped. And I was like, he did it to me too, you know? And as she looked at me and she was like, what? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, when? You know, and she couldn't believe it, you know? Because we were all in the same room. And she was like, I think you should tell them. And I was like, for what? You know? And I'm like, I think you should tell. So I did. And they literally kicked his ass. Literally. You know, they confronted him. They beat him up. And they hugged us. We went to breakfast. And we went on with our lives like nothing ever happened. You know? We went back to base. Back to, you know, formation, back to everyday life, you know, and it's something so terrible that you just want to put it away, you know, and it's so shameful, like, you don't want to talk about it. And I think that those feelings were understood within us without even having to say them, you know. Even with the guys, you know, like, it was hard to say. We said it. They stood up for us. And they said, all right, and that's it. I got you, you know, like, and that's how we just went back to life. You know, it's like we knew this secret, and we just left it that way, you know?
I'm so glad that they were at least able to confront this person, but holy shit. Yeah. for someone to have that level of just the gall to do this in a room filled with people, that's not someone that's being impulsive. That is someone that's a predator.
Absolutely.
Like, without a
100%.
Doubt.
100%.
100%. Oh, goodness. I'm so sorry. Do you think it's possible maybe he found somebody's meds and, like, put them in the beers?
I am almost positive. That he put something in our drinks, because, like I said, I mean, we hung out every weekend, and not that I'm bragging, but I mean, we were out there not playing, you know, but I felt like we did that because we were safe within each other, you know, like, it was always us and we had that comfort level and we're just being young people in the military, you know, what else is there to do, you know? But with that comparison, though, like to have a couple beers and have the guys passed out, I mean, they were passed out, you know? And for me to have had a beer, beer and a half, and to feel the way I did, you know, me and my best friend, we talk about that whenever it comes up, you know, we're like, he had to have put something in there. You know, and she tells me too, it's been 20 years, and she'll tell me, she's like, I remember you weren't really drinking, like, you know, like, I don't, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I don't understand. So that's the only conclusion we can come down to, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I can relate. I was drugged by a guy that I worked with in college. And there was that fuzziness. And it was the same. I had half a beer. And I wouldn't say I was, well, nah, let's just put it out there. I used to drink very heavily because I didn't really have a lot of coping skills for things I had gone through. And I didn't really know who to talk to about it. But I do remember that particular night. I'd gotten off of work at like midnight, and he was like, oh, just come out, have a beer with me. And we went to some bar that was like around the corner from the job, and I knew the people there. So I was like, oh, okay, sure, whatever. It's one beer, then I'm going to go home. But it was that feeling, that loss of control immediately when you have no plans on getting, like, you know, wasted or tipsy, because, you know, you either have something to do or you're just like, I'm not in that mood tonight. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like your whole body feels very heavy and your brain's cloudy and you don't know what's going on. But then also in the morning, you can't put the pieces together. And it's just the worst feeling, because you feel so vulnerable and so powerless.
Absolutely.
So I'm so, so sorry that happened to you. And my gosh. So you're saying that's about 2003, 2004. In the Marine Corps, were there reporting procedures available yet?
I don't. And see, that's the other thing that, by the way, I want to work on, right? I don't remember. And I know now it's more prevalent, right? So it's out there. We got social media and we're talking about it. We're doing this, you know? And so obviously that's some kind of tool, right? I don't ever remember having a conversation about this topic at all, ever, you know, ever. And so the idea of reporting, I guess, wasn't very prominent. But for me, I felt like I have this jerk doctor that can visibly see what's wrong with me and is like, no, you're lying. That's not true. I was like, and I'm supposed to go tell them I just got a... You know, I mean, let's be real. Like, I knew that I was literally going to be blown off there. You know, so for me, it wasn't realistic. Like, it wasn't.
I can understand,
you know,
because this doctor has evidence of you having fractures, the tendonitis. He has physical evidence, so, and is denying you. So why would, like, something like sexual assault is very much he said, she said, if there's not like a rape kit involved or witnesses. So why would they believe you then if there's already physical proof?
Yeah. So for me, that wasn't a realistic option. You know, I just felt like that was it, you know? And so when he was like, you know what, I'm just going to send you home, this and that, I was like, you know what, I've had it with this place. Like, just send me home. I don't even care. Admin sent me friggin', I don't even care. Just, I'm done. Like, I think that was the cherry on top for me. That was just it. You know, I was like, I've been fighting for my life literally since I got here, you know, and like, I can't continue to do this anymore. And so unfortunately, sadly, like I had to give up my dream, you know, because it was my dream. For a long time, I never knew, you know, like I said, never knew about the military. It was thought. I fell in love with it, you know, with what it represented. And I felt like it was really me. I told this story on my podcast once, but, you know, my mom used to say stuff like, don't come to me with that American stuff. You're not American. I was like, ma'am, I am American. I was born here, mama, you know? And I always battled with that all my life, you know? It was like that pull between having to be very Mexican and American when, you know, I wasn't born in Mexico. I don't know what that's like. I was born here and I was raised with the values and principles of being an American, you know? And so I always had that internal conflict with myself. And when I learned about the military, I was like, this is what I've been fighting to figure out all my life, like where I fit, you know? It was really devastating for me to have to give that up because, you know, it was something that I really felt, I felt like I belonged, you know? I felt like that's who I was. And it tore me apart physically, mentally, and emotionally, you know?
I can imagine. Yeah.
So, I mean, for me.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, like, that's one of my biggest losses in my life, you know? I lost myself a lot there.
I completely understand. What you are describing is called third culture. There's the culture of your parents and, you know, ancestors, and then there's the culture of where you grew up, which is different from theirs. And then, so you don't fit into either of those boxes. So you're in this middle ground, the third, where you kind of have to make up your own. And I'm that way too, because my parents are immigrants as well. So it's a very fine line to walk, because you have this extra set of rules and expectations that your friends don't understand. And they're like, well, what do you mean you can't go to the movies with us? You know, or what do you mean your parents don't want you to walk home from school this particular way? Yeah. Like it's and they really don't understand. And then you start to question it. And then when you question it, your family feels like you're questioning their values as a whole. So it's this whole thing. So I understand. It's gut-wrenching.
Yeah, it's
and then when you do find that place you belong,
they don't understand it. You know, it's like, yeah, it's exactly what you say. Like, because your values are different, not different, but unique to theirs, right? Because I still hold a lot of the values that my mom, you know, instilled in me. There's some things that I'm like, oh yeah, especially now as a parent, you know, I'm like, oh, I can see that we're not doing that, you know? but we're not doing that here, you know? We're going to hold on to those values here. But, you know, when they drift a little bit from what they see as an entirety, yeah, it's hard to fight with that, because then they feel disrespected, they feel unvalued, you know, and it's not that at all, because I have an enormous amount of respect for my mom, you know. She's a single parent and she did it all on her own as an immigrant, you know, no English, no car, no, you know. So it's not that, but they don't see it that way. And so it's really hard to become yourself outwardly. Like inside you know who you are, and you're like holding it in because you're like, oh, I don't want to piss off my parents, you know? But it's really difficult. But yeah, I'm glad you understand. Thank you.
Oh yeah. I'm happy to validate. There are tons and tons of first generation kids that are in that box where they're trying to appease their family, yet they're also trying to be who they are inside. And that leads to a lot of clashing.
Yeah.
And we don't really have the luxury of being like, you don't understand, mom, and this is who they am, and like running away and slamming the door, because like then you get the chancellor.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. Like, so. I mean, even as an adult, like sometimes, you know, I would do, or even now, like I do stuff. My husband's like, you're a grown woman. I know, but I can't say that, you know, like, no, that's my mom, you know, and my husband's Puerto Rican. I feel like their culture is a little bit more open, you know, so sometimes like he'll say stuff in front of his parents and he's like, ha ha ha. And I'm like, and they're like laughing too. And I'm just like, I would have gotten slapped if I would have, you know, like I couldn't throw in a just kidding after that. You know, my mom would have been like, excuse you. I know I taught you better than that, you know? And it's just, it's so funny because it's just different, you know? And yeah, it's definitely different. Yes.
Yeah, it's, and it's even, you're a grown adult, like I'm turning 35 soon and it's still, I'm like, nah, my mom will whoop my ass. Yeah, so no, sorry.
Absolutely.
Can't do it.
Absolutely.
She will find out. She knows.
She, yeah. Yep. Or that look like, you know, and I'm just like,
it's the telepathy.
Yeah. I'm like, I already knew. I should have just kept my mouth shut, you know, but yeah, this, yeah, same. I wish I could say my kids felt the same way about me, but they don't. It's definitely a whole different generation. It's funny because I wanted to like cross over, right? Like I wanted it to be a little bit different where like they can express themselves, you know? But I got one that expresses herself way too much, you know? She needs a couple of chanclas a day thrown at her, you know?
I understand. You know?
And then I have the other two that are like, oh yeah, no, I can't do that, you know? So whatever.
Yeah, but she's the wait, not like that child.
Yeah.
I completely understand how when you separated, and so you're still injured. Now you have the also, so you have the when you have a serious injury like that, that also comes with like a mental burden just from being injured, and then now you have this assault mental burden and you go home to your mom, and I can't imagine what her reaction might have been, because it must have been just all over your face.
She definitely told me, her words were, you are not who you used to be. And I didn't tell her about the assault, but just she knew about the physical limitations. And it was hard because I kind of got an I told you so, because she didn't want me to go, right? And she's like, you're gonna get hurt and they're not gonna care, and you know, you could possibly die, and what's gonna, you know? And so those were all her things, you know. And so when I came home, she was kind of like, I told you so, you know. And I did not want to hear that. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, you know, like but I also feel, and I'm not blaming this on her, but she was not supportive at all. And it was really hard to be away from home. And I feel like if she was supportive and I could have felt like I could have gone to her, maybe things would have been a little different. Not as far as the doctor and all. If he's going to be a jerk, he's going to be a jerk, right? But maybe I would have had that support and that power from my mom saying, you know, like, no, don't let him do that to you. What? You know, like, no, I know you. Who else can, or something, right? That in that effect. And I didn't have that because she was not happy that I was there. So I didn't really ever tell her anything, right? And so when I came home, she was just kind of like, I told you so, you know? And I was like, well, I mean, you did, you know? But that's not what I wanted to hear. And that's definitely not what I needed to hear. And so she did make it very clear, though. She was like, you're not who you used to be. And I said, well, no. I said, I've left and I've lived on my own now. And I'm a grown up, right? And she was like, no, that's not what I mean. And I remember that conversation really hitting home, you know, because I wasn't who I was then before I left. And I wasn't the person I was when I got there either, you know? So it was a very, it was just a very like intense, I don't even know how to explain it, you know, because she was right. Like, I think before I left, I was a very strong-willed and minded person. Boot camp made that even stronger. But then my time later just diminished all of that, you know? So it was like I went from here to here to here. So, yeah, without her even knowing really everything that happened, right? Like her seeing me come home, she just saw it.
Since it was the early 2000s and there wasn't really like a reporting structure and you weren't quite ready to tell your mom, how did you manage like your mental health and trying to heal your ankle, your toes, so, just this whole package of pain, basically?
I just went back to my life, feeling like a failure, right? Feeling invaluable because for those us that are survivors, we know, right, how much is taken away from us after an incident like that. So my self-value was at the on the floor. I mean, below that, if possible. And I was just embarrassed. Everybody knew it was a big deal, you know, that I left the Marine Corps. A little Bianca, she's tiny, like, oh, she, you know. And I was back. And so it was just a really shameful time, you know, and I had to go get my old job back. And from the people that were rooting for me, you know, and it was just a really hard time. And I think I just kind of had to swallow my pride and my pain. And I just went on with life making very bad decisions. Yeah.
That's what came out of it. Was
that was coping, my coping mechanism.
Not coping
doing
well.
Doing things that I knew better. Yeah. Doing what I knew I shouldn't be doing. Yeah.
That's no judgment here. That's a pretty normal reaction to that kind of trauma, because all of that stuff, no matter how far you push it down, it's going to come up and come out some way, whether that's excessive drinking, excessive partying, or just, you know, speeding in traffic.
Yeah.
Like you, there's some way that you want this pain to be noticed. And if it's not coming out in, say, therapy or something, it comes out in very reckless ways. Yeah. Was there some sort of breaking point that made you think, okay, I need help?
Yeah, that happened way later. Yeah, so I got home. I went back to work. I reconnected with an old high school classmate, which was also a Marine. I got married like a month in. That turned out to be a very violent marriage. I had a daughter through that marriage. I finally decided to leave. She was about like 5 months old. And I was like, I can't, me okay, but her, like, I can't, you know? And then I was trying to get my life back together for her, you know, as far as, I think I jumped out of a traumatic experience and jumped right into a new one that I didn't have time to process anything. And I was just like surviving, you know? And then I left my marriage. I still had to figure out how to survive for her, you know, for us. And then I met my now husband, and, I was a train wreck. I don't even know what he saw in me, but whatever, here we are 15 years later. Right. I was a mess. And so still not realizing I need help, right? Years into our marriage, I was just bad. Like my anger, man, my outburst with the kids, like with him at work, you know, this one incident, I was a receptionist at a dealership. I was so pissed. I literally threw the phone into the friggin' showroom. Like, I was just out of control. You know, I was drinking a lot and I was just always angry. And I gained a lot of weight. I was super unhealthy. I was always in the hospital and nothing was wrong. I was always in the ER and they're like, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong. You know what was wrong with me? I was unhealthy. That's what was wrong with me. You know, I was overeating, drinking too much, always angry, not sleeping. And one day I woke up and I was just sick and tired of literally being sick and tired. Like I literally woke up one day and I told my husband, I was like, I need help. And he was just like, what do you mean? You know, and I feel like it was that fear, you know, of like not pushing the monster, you know, and I was like, I need help. Like, there's something wrong with me. Like, this is not fair to you. Like, there's something wrong. And he was like, okay, like always super supportive. Yeah, if that's what you think, whatever you want to do, you know, and I was like, okay.
What a great guy.
Yeah. And wow. Yeah. Yeah. He really was like, yeah, whatever you want to do. And I was just like, okay. But I didn't even know how to go about that. You know, I was like, And so that's literally how I went about that. So I made the decision that I needed help, but I didn't know how to get the help. And then, it took me 10 years to get a rating through the VA, mind you. 10 years for them to even acknowledge, okay, an injury that was in my medical record the whole time, but whatever. And I think that was my salvation. So like I had already made that decision. I didn't know how to get help. And so like my own solution to that was going to the gym. So I told them, I'm like, I'm going to get a gym membership. If you want to come with me, come. If you don't, whatever. So then I started working out. And honestly, like that became like my therapy. So every time I worked out, like I would like process my thoughts, my behavior. And I was just like, okay, like, why do I do this? Like, you're messed up. Why are you, you know? And so that kind of became like my own therapy. And so then when I finally got my rating and was able to be seen at the VA, that's when I finally was able to get mental health help. And so that's it. That's how it happened. But it was like life had to take its, you know, toll. And life works in mysterious ways, you know, because it was soon after I made that decision and that acknowledgement that I needed help that my rating went through, you know, and then I had access to healthcare. Before that, I didn't have anything, you know? So, yeah.
Multispective is a podcast where we interview individuals around the world with unique stories and experiences. Guests share in detail some of the traumas they faced.
You know, because I feel in some ways so disgusting and broken on the inside, you know, I'm going to work on my outside and that's going to make me feel better.
Mental health issues they've lived with.
I was very hyper, like I felt good. That's one thing of mania, like you feel good.
Decisions they've made.
My life changed drastically in that moment. That one moment, I can't even begin to describe to people how hard, how good, how scary, how disturbing and emotional that moment was, smoking crack.
And more importantly, how they found strength, resilience, and healing.
Just being able to think and have conversations and walk places, that really helped me. You know, accelerate the process of, you know, rebuilding burnt bridges.
Tune in, subscribe, rate and review Multispective on www.multispective.org or your preferred podcasting app. You can also find us on any of the social media platforms that you use. Your feedback is always welcome. Lots of love, Multispective.
Before you had mentioned guilt, that had been mentioned a couple of times. Do you think that contributed to that anger and the acting out? Was it just the guilt of how could I have not stopped this from happening to myself or my friend?
Yeah, it was like this self-hate, you know, self-blame. And not so much for me, I think for her, because I I understand her. Whatever she's going through right now, I feel it. And whatever she went through before, we experienced the same exact thing, the same exact night. And so I have that guilt for her, you know? I wish I could have to know that I had the power to prevent it, you know? But it was just such an odd situation. It was, you know, and I think back to that and I'm like, it could have been a combination of fear and whatever was put, like I was groggy and confused and, you know, all these things come into play, and not to make excuses because I'm not, you know, but you don't know what you'll do in a situation like that until you're there, you know? And so I do carry that guilt till this day. I wish I knew where she was. I wish I could meet her and give her a hug and apologize, you know, because I do carry that guilt with me. And I know I can't control other people's behavior. He's a predator. He's a piece of crap. I mean, that's his decision. That's the way he wanted to live his life. And I understand that I can't do nothing as far as that, you know, but I still feel like I owe her an apology, you know? Yeah.
I can understand that feeling. Well, definitely. I am here to tell you that that was not your fault. That person's behavior, all of that was a series of planned, terrible, and sadly well thought out choices by him. So it, when that kind of trauma happens, there are the four reactions that are very, very normal. They're all normal, and people usually leave it to fight or flight, but there's fight, flight, fawn, and freeze. So all of them, it just depends on the person. They're all normal reactions. So definitely your body did what was natural to that situation. The fawn is where you kind of try to smile and like appease the person, like like if somebody yells out something random to you in the street and you don't know what's going to happen. And then the freeze is very much where you just, and you don't know how to react, and all of them totally normal. It's not anything to do with like a lack of strength or a failure of character or something like that. It's just a trauma response. So I hope I can help alleviate some of that guilt, because I've carried it as well. But it's truly, there's just nothing. I don't want to say you didn't have a choice, but like your body reacted how it was going to react. And if you went through something similar now, maybe you would react differently. Maybe you wouldn't. Like it's like that's your body's reaction to danger. Yeah. So you never really know. So I hope that I can help relieve some of that, because it does eat at you, and it's hard to explain to others. And she might even feel the same way, of we were all in the room together. Yeah. Completely understand. When you were getting the mental health treatment at the VA, were you able to get your therapist or doctor to understand all of that happening, and how were they able to help work through that?
So when I started being seen, I was still in the LA area, and so any VA is difficult to get into, right? Especially mental health. But I had this really great PA, and she, obviously that's not her field. She was my general practitioner, but every time she saw me, she would touch on it. And then she'd always tell me, we don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, or, you know, you can tell me what you want, but we don't have to, you know. And so that's kind of where it started. And then we made a move over to Riverside. And there was a vet center here, and I found the best therapist in the world there. She was a Marine too, and she's amazing. She was my first therapist, and she really, like, she's so great. I will tell you this. She's so great that she helped me to a certain point, and then I gave her up so that she could help my daughter. And I was like, I'm going to sacrifice you. I will, you know, she's amazing. And she also saved my daughter too. She was going through a tough time, PTSD too. And she was little, but she was that great. She really did help me, get my life together and really find value in myself again. She's just another great person that I owe a lot to in my life. And ironically, a Marine, I'm telling you, these Marines, man, they keep popping up in my life somehow. And, you know, they're just, I was meant to be maybe somehow for, you know, to, I don't know. But so that's how I finally was able to really make some mental strides. And emotional strides when we got out here and I started seeing her.
For our listeners that don't know, the vet center, it's, I don't know how to explain that one, but they have a completely different system from the VA. So what is in your notes at the vet center isn't reported at the VA. It's like a completely separate organization.
Right? Kind of.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's funded by the VA, yet it's separate. Yeah. I have to do some research on that one. Don't quote me on it, but when I do find out, I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah, the vet center, it's free care, and they do the behavioral health, mental health, all sorts of different resources available there. So if you have one in your area, please go look them up, because that could be a great resource for healing for you. With your therapist, was there a particular coping skill or exercise that she had you do that kind of blew your mind and put things in order for you mentally?
I think the biggest skill she taught me was grounding myself, because I was very I've always been impulsive. I have to backtrack a little bit. Like, that's hence joining the Marine Corps, and, you know, like, that it's just my personality, you know. I get an idea in my head and I'm like, I'm gonna do it, and if I fail, oh well, but I did it, you know. So I've kind of always been that way, but I think I became impulsive in a negative way, you know. I think she helped me really take reins of my impulsivity and my anger. So learning to ground myself was, I think, the best skill that she taught me, because, let me tell you, it was like, get out of my way. I did not care. I didn't care who was going to get hurt along the way. If I had something to say and I was angry and I was triggered and I was whatever, it could be my kids, it could be my boss, it didn't matter. And that is not a good trait, let me tell you. It was not good. So I think that was the best skill that she taught me. And she told me, I guess the skill was to stop and breathe. And I had to think about, is it three things? Three things, right? And to point out three things to make me refocus and realize where I was, and then just, you know, walk myself through the emotion. And so I think that was the best skill she taught me, because it was a battlefield, girl. This everywhere we went, I was at war with the world, with myself, but I was taking it out on the world, you know? Yeah.
Yes, I definitely been there, and there's just so much going on internally that, like we said before, it just has to come out. And unfortunately, it's your family, your coworkers, they're all the collateral damage of that internal war.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad that you were able to come to some resolution and also get that for your daughter. That's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Was there anything like that? There was writing that was also a coping skill, and now you have a podcast. Do you want to share about that?
Yeah. So after I went through my healing, well, I'm still healing, but I think after I got over my that hump, right, where now I feel like, I think you get to a hump where you are a survivor, right? Like you're like, I made it. This is it. I have value. I can do stuff, right? So I think what really helped me was I got an education. So I went back to school and I was like, hey, I'm worthy. I'm capable. You know, like I'm not that broken. I'm not that messed up. You know, I do matter. And I can do stuff, you know, like you lose your sense of self and your self-worth, you know? And when I finished school, I was like, something was missing, you know, something was missing. And I realized that what was missing was that I felt like I needed to make a change and an impact. And I wanted people to know that there is life after tragedy. And I felt like I was a good example of that. And for those,
absolutely.
For those that know me, and for those that have just started to get to know me, I've been very open and honest. And you can see, you know, my track record, the life, you know, life gave me a trampling for sure, you know, and I came over on the other side. And now I'm a successful, valuable person in society, right? I'm contributing to society, I feel. I think that's an important an important value to have of yourself, right? After you overcome trauma, that you do contribute some kind of value to the world. And so I decided, you know what? I've been silent enough. And I think silence is the problem. And so I said, screw it. I guess everybody's going to get to know my life and know the bad, the good, and the ugly. And I felt like if my story or stories could help at least one person a year, you know, I've done enough, you know? And so, yeah, so I decided I started the blog. Then after that, I said, okay, let's do this podcast. That led to writing the children's mental health books. Because I also realized that it's hard to find that language for your kids to understand, you know, what you're going through. And what you, what they perceive is not what you are trying to project, right? And so that led me to that. After my healing, my major healing, my kids started to open up more to me. We got closer. My girls, actually, because they're older, and they would tell me, you know, they started telling me like, hey, you know, we thought you didn't love us because you didn't like us touching you, you know, because touching was a trigger, like, unannounced touching, you know, and I'd like, literally, I would like shove them away, you know, and things I deeply regret and are like painful, you know, but I mean, they were honest and I felt like that was valuable. And I thought that would have a value to other veterans that are experiencing the same thing in their children, right? And so they would tell me like, oh, I thought you didn't love us anymore, or, you know, you were always angry and yelling, and, you know, like we always thought we were always doing something wrong. And those things really, really resonated with me after I was able to accept them, you know? And I think that's a big part of healing, when you can take accountability, you know, and you're not defensive. And so I wrote the My Moto Mommy PTSD and healing books. And so I wrote one for every branch. It's the same story, but just based on my behavior and what my girls were willing to share that, you know, that they felt during those times. And yeah, I just hope, I just wanna open the conversation and hope that we can find better solutions. And I also want to be some type of support because I know that journey is lonely. It feels like you're the only one going through that. You know, you feel like, why me? Only me? Why does the life hate me? You know, and the things that happen inside your home too, you know, you're like, you don't want to share. It's scary. People are going to judge you. And I just want people to know that you're not alone, you know, and the feelings and the behaviors, they're normal. That's your body, you know, telling you, you know, how it feels. You know, there's nothing wrong. It's the truth. You are feeling those things, and people need validation, you know. You're not crazy. It is real. It is valid because it was your experience. And it's your body trying to tell you that it needs, you know, help. And so I didn't realize that for a long time. I was like, either I thought I was crazy, or I just was in denial, you know? And so I know that, or I think I can't be the only one that felt that way, right? And so, I wish there was support, you know, and I didn't have it. And sometimes it's easier to get support from a stranger, right? Like it's easier, yes. You know? So yes. I think also too, I've had a lot of people reach out. We've had conversations and we check in once in a while, you know, and it's a safe space, right? Because you don't have to see me every day, and we're not going to bump into each other, and you feel safe. You know, you have a space to connect with someone and be like vulnerable. And so, yeah, that's how that came to be. So,
for the books that you had mentioned, there was one for each service. Do you want to share the titles and give our listeners, or well, our viewers now, give them a view of what they look like?
Yeah, for sure. So they're called My Moto Mommy is the series, and I know it's MOTTO, which is technically motto, right? But there's a backstory to the double T, but it's meant for moto, right? Like motivated. Yeah, so it's My Moto Mommy. And then, so for the PTSD and healing, if you search it up on Amazon, it'll come up. But I didn't do PTSD and healing here because it was just too much. And I wanted to make sure everybody could find their own branch, you know? So, so like, this is the Marine Corps. And then I tried to include my kids. And so...
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah, and so they all look the same. We just have the different service member uniform, but it's the same story. And so, yeah. Wow. And so there's one for every branch because everybody deserves to be acknowledged. And then
absolutely. Oh, that is so wonderful.
Thank you. And then I had people reach out that weren't in the military. And so I was like, oh, that's true, you know? And so I made like a generalized version, but that one does have the PTSD and healing in the title because it wasn't like too much, you know? And then, so ultimately that is my goal to continue the mental health books for children. But I published two not for fun, but I did for Veterans Day last year, I did Marine Corps birthday. So it's just kind of, yeah. So it's just a kind of little fun, you know, like the traditions of the Marine Corps birthday. And then we kind of incorporate them every year still here. So I kind of like mixed a little bit of the two. So it's like educational, but still kind of like cute and fun. And then I did a tribute to my service dog, Whiskey. And so this one too, and this one too is kind of educational. Like gives you kids like the rules of the dog wearing the vest, like what, you know, their services, you know, and so I did that. So that's more what I'm aiming for, you know, to create more mental health books so we can bridge that communication gap, you know, between each other, because I think it's important. I don't think there's a lot of that out there either. So
I think it's like starting to come around, right? Now, yeah. That people are, yeah, they're more comfortable speaking about, yeah, it. But thank you so much for filling that need, because kids are so affected by this, they're secondarily affected, yes, and they have no clue what's going on. You know, they're just along for the ride. So I'm so glad you were able to find a way to, it's not only an apology, but it's more like, I love you this much, yeah, that I was able to create this, not only for you to understand, but so other parents can explain their love for them. And that's so wonderful. Oh my goodness. I'm over here tearing up. Oh, no. That's so sweet.
Thank you. Yeah. No, I just really, you know, like I said, I don't know really what my purpose is. Well, I know what my purpose is. You know, I just want to be a voice for, you know, that's my purpose. I just want to be a voice. And it's leading me down various paths. And so whatever is, I mean, I don't know what the right avenue is. It's like I'm opening all the avenues that I can, you know, and I hope that in every avenue that I open, there's a benefit for someone in need of it. And that's all I can really ask for. I'm just excited and scared at the same time, because it's a scary process, you know. But I'm trying to do the best I can with what I have to give. And I think the best I can give is my experience. Yeah.
That is so amazing. Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. There was one thing I did want to point out was, earlier in the interview, we talked about how military culture teaches you not to stand out,
yes,
immediately, whether that's in training and then again now, or when you were trying to get help medically, still it was, I can't really stand out too much, let me suck it, yeah, up. And then when you separated and hadn't yet dealt with all of the internal struggles, you were still somewhat trying not to stand out, because it was like, okay, let me just keep it clamped down. But now you are stepping out. You're stepping out into the light. You're making this known. You're actively trying to help other people and enrich their families. How does that feel?
Scary, because you're right. We are taught not to stand out. You know, we are taught, don't say you're sick, because that makes you weak. You know, you don't need to go to sick call. Mm-mm, you got to tough it out, you know? And it's scary, but empowering, because it's like you're silenced for so long and you're taught that that's the right way. It's the right way to be silent, you know? It's the right way to not be seen. And I guess in a certain way, I mean, in combat, yes, that makes sense, right? There are certain situations, but it's so ingrained in you that it becomes your life, right? So you're just like, I can't stand out. You're right. I can't be seen. I can't be me. I have to be this other me. And so it's scary, but it's empowering, you know, because like even today, to jump on here today, it was scary, you know, I'm like, oh my God, even though I've done it a bunch of times on my own and it's on my blog, it's in black and white on the internet for the world to see, you know, you still have that because it's ingrained in you, right? And I think that has a lot to do with why we don't report and why we don't, because we don't want to stand out and we don't want to be pointed out. And you don't want to be that one, you know, that one that points the finger, because we're brothers and sisters and we're supposed to be one, you know, and so, yeah, standing out becomes, it has a negative annotation to it. And that's not the case, you know.
Very true. And just thank you again. I am so proud of you for being able to have that level of recovery and then want to share it. That's such a beautiful thing. And your experience and your voice is so important. And shout out to your husband for just being a rock like that. And then also being grateful for your kids to give you that feedback so you could create this wonderful resource for other families. Just before we wrap up, please shout out the name of your blog and any other projects you might be working on in the future so that we can look you up.
Okay, yeah. So my blog is motobunny.com. And the books are My Moto Mommy. They are on Amazon. And there's the Kindle version too, so you can also purchase that to download. There are more My Moto Mommy books to come this year. There's been a large request for My Moto Daddy, so we're working on that. So hopefully we can get one for each brand.
Wonderful.
And Instagram handle is Moto Bunny. TikTok is Moto Bunny Official. And there's an Etsy store too. For some reason, the blog website, the store there kind of limits sometimes. So the Moto Bunny store on Etsy also has merchandise there too. And the long-term goal is to raise enough money to be able to create some kind of funding for survivors. So the merchandise is not just, it's a business, but it's a business with a bigger plan. So, if you guys would love to support any of those endeavors, I would really, really appreciate it. Because they're funding for bigger things in the future. And the podcast is Moto Moves podcast, and that's on YouTube now, Spotify and Apple. Oh my God, there's a lot. Anyway.
Yeah. Hey. That is just a testament to your power. And I will make sure to get the links to everything in the show notes. Thank you so much, Bianca, for this. This was such a powerful story. And although I'm so sorry to hear that you went through that, there's just this light that's shining through that I see this just absolute joy and wanting to share that with people. And that's just lovely after something like that. So thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. But thank you for creating this space for us to talk and to come together. And I think the more spaces there are and the more opportunity, the more powerful we become and the more change we can make. So I appreciate you for doing this and everything you do for us. So thank you too.
As we wrap up this episode, I just want to extend my greatest and sincerest thanks to Bianca for sharing her story. As you've heard, it was pretty difficult. It is like that. Some are very comfortable sharing their story, some not so much. And that's just how trauma distributes itself among human beings. We're all very different and we all react to it very differently. But definitely go look up her books. She has them on Amazon, but they're also available on her website. And she has some really cool apparel on there. I'm actually going to buy one of those tank tops pretty soon. I don't have any kids to give the book to, so tank tops for me. But definitely appreciate Bianca's resilience and all the work that she's doing through advocacy. Check out her podcast as well. Please remember that it is so important to break the stigma around mental health. And she figured out one of the best ways to do it, educate kids. If you want to send Bianca a message, you'll go ahead and go to her episode on our website, silencevoicesmst.com. In between the previous and next episode buttons, you see a bright green button that says, send Bianca a message. And guess what you do? Click on it. You're taken to our Salute to Survivors tab. There you can leave a message, give her some encouragement, or
ask about what she has coming up for the year, because she has quite a bit. In our next episode, you can look forward to an expert on MST, as in she wrote her thesis on it. She shares a lot of interesting facts, but she also shares her experiences with MST and seeing how it's affected other people. There is the cost of the lives affected by MST, and she will enlighten us on how much MST actually costs the average taxpayer. And I'm your host, Rachel Smith. Thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, I invite you to stay safe, be kind, and take care. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us on Silence Voices Stories of MST. If you found this content helpful, don't forget to subscribe for more resources and support. Remember, you're not alone in this journey. Together, we can create a more supportive and understanding community for survivors of MST. Until next time, we'll see you later.